It's Faith Radio Mornings with Ted and PK on this Thursday morning, 6:38. Glad you're joining us today. And welcome back to the show, our regular guest and friend, Leslie Vernick. Leslie is a licensed clinical social worker who has her own private counseling practice and also more than 20 years of experience counseling Christians from a biblical worldview. She has an active blog community as well. You can find it via our website, myfaithradio.com. And her latest book is The Emotionally Destructive Marriage. Welcome back, Leslie.
Hi, Ted. Hi, PK.
Good morning. Great to have you with us today. Tell us a little bit about the question that was posed to you when somebody was going to some church leaders and was talking about emotional, financial, or verbal abuse, because that kind of led into this study and these thoughts about Abraham and Sarah. But what was their question and what were they wondering about?
Well, they were going to their church leaders, as many people do in these kind of situations, for help. They were going, I don't know necessarily at first they were going for help in terms of getting a sanction for divorce, but they were going for help that, can you do something? Can you speak to my husband? Can you say something about this? And she commented, she said, I've spoken in depth to my church leaders, and they just won't address the issue of emotional, financial, or verbal abuse. And so what they asked her to do was ask, you know, to think about the situation of Sarah and Abraham. And they said, you know, is your situation worse than what Abraham did to her? Mm. And she was really concerned about that because, you know, she reads the scriptures and she sees that Sarah submitted to Abraham and, you know, God rescued Sarah, but nobody else rescued Sarah. And so is she supposed to just wait and let God rescue her? Is not her church responsible to help her in this situation? They were also telling her that even though she's in an emotionally and verbally and financially abusive marriage, there really were no biblical grounds for divorce other than abandonment or adultery. And since she didn't have those two technically, she just had to put up with it like Sarah had to put up with it. And that was sort of the question, do I just have to keep going like this and I don't know what to do?
Well, and the issue too, her husband wouldn't work, and then he would, kind of like an alcoholic in a way, he would threaten that he would divorce her and then come back and say he was sorry. And that's really abusive, isn't it? It's that roller coaster thing.
Well, it's saying, you know, in some ways he had abandoned her. I don't want to work. I don't want to care about you. I don't want to talk to you nice. I don't want to treat you loving. Mm. I don't want to care about how you feel. So he was living in the home, but he wasn't in the marriage.
Okay.
There was abandonment already, but that's, you know, my interpretation of that. But, yeah, she was saying, I want to be right in God's eyes, and I fear losing his blessing if I go the route of divorce. But I don't know what else to do. And she was afraid of the consequences. Like, was that stepping out of God's will? If she just said, enough, I'm not going to live like this anymore.
Leslie, I appreciate how you begin your response to this person's quandary and question. You just start by saying that you feel heartsick for her. And I think this is just good to pause for a moment and remind us that when somebody is struggling, a lot of times I think we want to come in with that solution right away and, oh, here's what you should do. Here's, you know, who you should talk to and that, which it's good to get to. But I appreciate how you're just identifying with the pain. It's a good lesson for us, I think, don't you?
Yeah, I do. I think that sometimes even if we come in with a good solution, if we haven't really understood the pain that they feel, they don't really feel heard. And so I think it's really important that we stop and just validate that she has real grounds, not only to be so discouraged and despondent in her marriage, but that the very people that she's gone to for help with her marriage that could have stepped in, that could have perhaps said to her husband, you know, what's going on? We don't treat our women this way in this church. We don't treat women this way. God doesn't want us to treat women this way. You know, why aren't you working? And let's get some help for you. They could have stepped in and perhaps made a big difference in this man's life and in this marriage. They didn't. They just sat on their hands and did nothing. And that makes me heartsick.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's put the story of Abraham and Sarah under the microscope for a moment, too, because I thought you had some excellent points, too, as you wrote back to her. And I'm sure that this was encouraging to her, but she probably saw some similarities, too. What did you find as you looked through the story?
Well, I've always, you know, been intrigued by this story because, you know, Abraham and Sarah's marriage has always been held up because of, you know, the promise of Isaac, but it wasn't the best marriage at all. And, you know, and Abraham, out of his fear and foolishness, he felt insecure. Apparently, Sarah was a very beautiful woman, and when the king wanted to take her, he didn't stick up for her. He just said, well, she's my sister, and so, of course, you can have her. And God intervened and saved Sarah twice, actually, in the scriptures, once in Genesis 12 and once in Genesis 20. And God intervened and saved Sarah and scolded Abraham for what he did. And so the implication by this story from the church leaders is, you know, you're not going through anything worse than Sarah did. And so if your husband's abusing you or mistreating you, well, you know, if you're to be protected, then God will protect you. And that seems to be the implication, that we're not going to be doing anything. We're not really obliged to do anything because, you know, nothing happened to Sarah. She had to submit, and God finally rescued her. Mm-hmm. And so my challenge was that Abraham and Sarah were nomads. They were, you know, they had no one to go to for support or help or, you know, to get Abraham and say, wait, what are you doing? This is crazy.
Yeah.
You should be doing this. They had no one to go to. And so God did intervene. But if we're to be like God, if God calls us to be imitators of Christ and live a life of love, then as church leaders, we're to provide some measure of protection for women in these situations.
That's a good point. Leslie Vernick again joining us here on Faith Radio Mornings. And we encourage you to check out links for her book, The Emotionally Destructive Marriage, and her blog as well at myfaithradio.com. Let's do this. Let's just pause for a moment, and we'll continue to look at the story of Sarah and Abraham and how it can apply to our lives today after a quick break here with Leslie Vernick. If you have a question or comment, by the way, maybe you want to ask Leslie about a specific situation, you can give us a call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. And you can be anonymous too if you'd like on the phone. More with Leslie Vernick coming up in just 2 minutes.
You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings with Ted and PK, and we're talking with Leslie Vernick this morning and getting some lessons from Abraham and Sarah's story.
So, Leslie, before the break there, you were talking about how we are called to be ambassadors for Christ, but that doesn't mean turning a blind eye and keeping silent and therefore letting our silence empower the bully or fool to think that their behaviors are not all bad or wrong or hurtful. Talk about what God gave this example to us for. What's the reason behind it, in your opinion?
I'm sorry.
I think just what example can we take from this, or what can we learn from this example, I should say, of Sarah and Abraham, rather than condoning behavior? God has this in the Bible to show that he cares about all of us, the spouse and the person, right?
Well, when I read the Bible, I'm always saying, why did God put this story in the Bible? I mean, there's some horrible stories in the Bible, you know, mm-hmm. really horrible ones, and, you know, Judges, and, you know, awful. So I'm saying, of all the things God wanted in the Bible, why is this there? And so when I read it that way, I'm saying, what are the lessons learned from their life? What is the lessons this story is trying to teach me? And most of the time, Christians take out of this story for women that they say, you know, Sarah was so submissive, she called Abraham Lord, and they quote Peter in 1 Peter 3:9 that, you know, she's to, you know, were to imitate her example. But Peter also went on in that passage to warn husbands to live with their wives in an understanding way and to show honor to her. And so Peter was a little bit balancing that Sarah was mistreated. But the error they make out of this passage is that because of Sarah's example to a wife that she's to submit, that then a Christian woman who's being abused by her husband economically, financially, sexually, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, physically, that she should just submit regardless of what it costs her. And the underlying belief here is that God will protect her like he did Sarah. But I don't think this is in line with the whole counsel of God, or is it in line with the story? Because God protected Sarah and Abraham, I think he's giving us an example of what we're to do. And so when we are told of someone who's being abused, what are we to do? To ignore it and just say, well, Sarah, God help, you'll get help.
Mm-hmm.
Just like, are we supposed to say to the person who has no coat, well, you have no coat, so I'll pray for you. And First John says, if you say that to a person, you're not really knowing God. Because if you see that this person has no coat and you just say, I'll pray for you, you're like an infidel. You're not saying, here's my coat. You have two coats. Give them something. And so when we have the resources to help someone, we're to do that. And so the church's responsibility is not to turn a blind eye or to excuse someone's selfish behaviors or be passive or to keep silent, because when we do that, we act, or even to remain neutral. When we remain neutral, and counselors are so taught to remain neutral, but when we're in this kind of situation, when we remain neutral, like, well, you're a sinner and he's a sinner, we're actually empowering the bully to continue those bullying behaviors.
And again, our phone number, if you'd like to comment on this, and maybe you have a question as well, and you really can relate to this story. Our number is 877-933-2484. It's 877-933-2484. And again, you can be also anonymous this morning if you'd like. Leslie, I was thinking, too, of those that are finding themselves in this place where they feel like they're alone and there's nobody that they can really go to, and maybe they're in a small community and everybody knows everybody, and whether it's the husband or the wife, or, you know, what kind of advice do you have for them? Because there's such a feeling of being trapped, I'm sure, at that point, because what do you do and where do you go? And you can't talk to anybody.
You're right, and there's such shame about, you know, disclosing, because you're thought as the bad guy because you've thrown your spouse under the bus because you're saying bad things about them.
And you're a Christian.
And you're a Christian.
How can you do that?
That's right. You shouldn't be doing it. So there's such shame and there's such intimidation. And so it is very difficult. There isn't a lot of support in the Christian community. That's why my blog, I think, has just taken off, because the women there are very supportive and they're anonymous. You don't get, you know, nobody can trace your email on my blog. So I think it feels very freeing for them to be able to just say what they need to say and know that their comments are private and that, you know, they can't be found out, and they can have that community to interact. Because when you're in this kind of relationship and you have no one to talk to, you may start to feel like, you know what, maybe that is what God says. Maybe God says I'm just to, you know, endure and suffer. And like one woman told me, she said, I'm like a lamb led to the slaughter. I'm just going to be like Jesus. And I'm thinking, how crazy is that? Mm-hmm. You know, Jesus was the lamb led to the slaughter. You don't have to be the lamb led to the slaughter. There was already one lamb led to the slaughter, and you're not Christ. And so God calls us, you know, in Proverbs 31:8-9, he says that we're to open our mouths for the mute, for the rights of all who are destitute. Open our mouths and judge righteously. Defend the rights of the poor and needy. And that's just one verse of hundreds and hundreds of verses that we can quote where God hates injustice and oppression and liars and prideful people and those who misuse their authority to hurt others. And church leaders seem to have only one verse, and that is God hates divorce.
Mm-hmm.
But that's true. But he also hates these other things. And why would the church rather support revilers and liars and oppressors and the proud just to keep a marriage together when the spouse is not sinless, but she's screaming for help? And for those who are supposed to represent the heart of God, they ought to help her and him get their marriage together, not just keep it the way it is.
We've been talking this morning about hope, and I think there is such a hopelessness that happens at that time, too, where I think you just get to a point where you're paralyzed and you don't really know what to do. And the blog, as you're saying, is huge. I see so many hearts just being poured out there. Is there something that they can do as well? I mean, do they just drive somewhere? Do they just leave? Or, you know, is there a way to find somebody that they can go and talk to? Again, I'm thinking small community, not a lot of resources, and it's if they can't find that within their church, what would you suggest for them?
Yeah, most of the time women can find a lot of help through domestic violence support groups. They can be found online. They can be found in most communities, at least if they're larger. You may have to drive a bit. And those are totally anonymous. They're usually free. And at least you can kind of meet other women who know what your life is like. And usually they're very sensitive to the Christian perspective and your confusion about, you know, God says he hates divorce and so I have to stay, or God says he just wants me to submit so I have no voice or no choice. But the saddest thing to me about that, PK, is why are we sending our people in the church to secular people when the church should be the one that we can go to for safety? And, you know, if the church represents Christ to the body, and when the body goes to Christ or the church and says, help, and they just say, sorry, but your husband, you know, gets the final say and you don't have any voice, is that really what God says to women? Mm-hmm. Is that what he really says to it? And I don't think he does. God cares about the sanctity of marriage for sure, but he also cares about the safety and the sanity of the individuals in it. And when we as a church fail to recognize that and help people, we've done a grave injustice.
Leslie, can you just say a word, too, about maybe the mom that's trying to protect her kids? Kids know what's going on, even if they can't necessarily hear every argument or every exchange between a husband and wife. Maybe for the mom that's trying to shield their children from a tense situation, and yet the kids know something's going on. What's your encouragement for her? How can she let her kids in on what's going on and pray with them?
Well, I think that she needs to tell her children the truth, and I don't think she needs to tell every dirty detail of the truth, but I think she needs to say, you know, daddy's not behaving properly. He's got a bad temper, or he doesn't, you know, manage his money well, and we have to pray for him, and mommy's going to have to figure out what to do here. Mommy will keep you safe. Mommy has to be the safety person if daddy isn't and if daddy's scary, because this kind of problem in a marriage, depending on how severe it is, can take its huge toll on children, and they repeat those sins in the next generation. If I could, I'd like to just give a toll-free number for people to call if they're really in danger and they feel for their safety. The National Domestic Violence Hotline is a number that they can call, and they can develop a safety plan with a counselor right over the phone, and they'll help them walk through what they should do. So that number is 1-800-799-7233.
Okay. That's important.
You have that one more time?
Yeah, that's good.
It's 1-800-799-7233.
Great.
Leslie, we so appreciate this. And I just want to maybe turn the tables on you for just a second in a good way, though, because I can't imagine what it's like to be in your chair as you're hearing these stories and answering these blogs. And again, we've been talking about turning around four-letter words this morning, and hope is one word that we're focusing on today. Where, how do you draw on hope, and where do you find your hope? Because you're hearing a lot of sad things, a lot of marriages that are being just really ripped apart. How do you stay encouraged?
You know, thank you for asking me that. I stay encouraged by listeners' encouragement of me that it's helpful to them to read the blogs, or, you know, that was encouraging that someone's sticking up for women in this situation and men. And also just really knowing that God has called me to this. But I have to tell you, it does take its toll. Sometimes you just feel like, oh, God, where are you? It looks like evil is winning, and where, even in the church, and I don't understand why you're not more potent and more powerful, because I think we could make a huge change in marriages if we would just help couples in these situations in the right way and not try to just peace, you know, when there is no peace, and just placate and put Band-Aids over bad, bad situations.
It reminds me of a quote that I keep with me that Henry Blackaby said. He said, if things are getting darker, there's something wrong with the light. The light is no longer dispensing the darkness. We just really have to draw on the Lord, and so many times we don't go to him as our source. And boy, you see these inappropriate behaviors happening because he is no longer the center of our universe, and it becomes really detrimental. But thank you, Leslie. I'm so glad that you are finding those sources of encouragement and hope in your life, too. And I just want to pray for you before we let you go, because this, again, is a difficult thing that you do, but it's so essential.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.